is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 51, and today I will be talking about some sensory processing issues, specifically surrounding the proprioceptive sense. Before we get started, I would like to say thank you to those of you who have been supporting the show by making your Amazon purchases through my website. I really appreciate all of you who are taking the time to do that for me. It's very easy to do, and it doesn't cost you any extra money to do it. Just find any item on my website that is an Amazon product, click on that item, and it will take you to Amazon. Then you can buy anything you want there. It doesn't have to be related to anything on my website at all. Just using the links makes a connection to my podcast, and a small percentage of your purchase will get kicked back to me. You really won't even know that it happened, but trust me, it does work. I know there will be a lot of Amazon shopping going on in the next few weeks with all the holidays coming up. So please, if you can, just take one extra step and use my website links to get there. Again, thank you to those of you who are already doing that for me. Every little bit helps me keep this show running for you guys. Now for today's topic, I have talked about proprioception quite a bit in some of my older shows, but there is so much to talk about with sensory processing. I feel like we just hit the tip of the iceberg with all of it at this point. For those of you who are new to the show, or just a refresher for you guys that have been listening to the show for a while but need a reminder, let me explain proprioceptive sensory processing. This is one of those, I would call it, non-traditional senses. I say this because it's not one of the five basic senses that we learn as kids. But that doesn't mean it's any less important. In fact, it is a very important sense for all of us to have. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who have trouble processing proprioceptive information. Proprioception is based on information about where our body is in space, or where our body is in our environment. The information that tells us where our body is in this world mainly comes from our muscles, tendons, and ligaments. If you think about it, these parts of our body are directly and voluntarily controlled by us. Our brain tells our muscles, tendons, and ligaments what to do by sending signals to those areas. The signals tell us to move our arms, legs, head, and body in general. Sometimes the signals between the body and the brain get mixed up, or the signals get delayed or take longer than we would expect for them to travel back and forth in our body. For those of us who have typical proprioceptive sensory processing systems, the best way for us to look at this and get some idea of how it works is by doing something like this. Standing up, close your eyes, put both arms out straight to each side away from your body, and slowly bring one hand up and touch your nose with your index finger. Some people will be better at this than others, and some people might have trouble doing this the first time or two, then start to improve with practice. And then there are people who struggle with this, and it might take a lot more practice than everyone else to finally get it, if ever. The reason we close our eyes for that example is because when our eyes are open, our brains rely on the visual information to help us determine where our body is in the room or in the world. Without that visual information, our brain and body have to do more of the work to try and feel where we are and feel what is going on within our body. Also, by standing up with your eyes closed, you're making your brain and body do even more work. Not only just to try and touch your nose with one finger, but to keep standing upright without falling over. You might notice if you just stand in one place with your eyes closed for a while, your body may start to sway in different directions. This is your brain and body making accommodations based on partial information from your vestibular system, which tells you where your head is in this world, but also proprioception based on the tension of your muscles, tendons, and ligaments in your feet, legs, and back mostly for that activity. Which brings me to the next point, which is that earlier I mentioned the information being sent from your brain to your body to tell your arms and legs what to do. But it goes the other way also, where the tension in your muscles and joints sends information to your brain to let your brain know what is going on. Then your brain can process that information and send appropriate signals back to those areas to respond in different ways. This is a highly complicated process of pathways and nerve signals, and I'm not going to get into those details because it's more complicated than it has to be to talk about it in that way. I like to talk about it in a more functional way because it's easier to understand. What are your muscles and joints telling your brain? Well, they're sending signals about how much tension and force they are using to do any movements or actions. Like I said, it goes both ways, so your brain and body are constantly communicating about these movements and actions that you are doing. So let's say you're going to hammer a nail into a piece of wood, for example. Your proprioceptive system works to get this done, along with other systems, but the purpose here is to explain proprioception today, so just go with it. It starts with picking up the hammer and nail and making a determination about how heavy each one is so you can figure out how much force you'll need to use to hit the nail to get it to go into the board. You are calculating these things before you even start to try and swing the hammer at the nail just by holding the hammer and feeling how much tension you need to hold it with your muscles and joints. When you swing the hammer and hit the nail, your body and brain are communicating the whole time to make adjustments to get the job done, including things like aiming at the nail with the hammer, hitting it hard enough to make it go into the board, but not so hard that you bend the nail or that you hit the board and make dents in it. If you don't hit it hard enough, it could take a lot longer than necessary to get the nail to go all the way in. A person with proprioceptive issues could potentially have any number of difficulties with this. It depends on the way their system works. It starts again with picking up the hammer. The person may pick up the hammer, then drop it right away, and continue to drop it frequently during the activity. When they bend down to pick up the hammer, they could hit their head on the wall or table or whatever is near the area. Or they might have such a tight grip on the hammer that they have white knuckles on their fingers from squeezing so hard. They might raise the hammer up to get ready to hit the nail and hit themselves in the face or the head with the hammer before they can even try to swing it down to hit the nail. Or they could raise it up and it could fly out of their hands backwards over their shoulder. Or they raise it up and swing it back so far it hits the wall behind them. If they're able to swing the hammer down towards the nail, they might miss it completely, hit their other hand that's holding the nail, hit the nail, but it falls over rather than going into the board, or hit the nail and it bends because of how hard and where they hit it. This one seemingly simple activity could be such a challenge for a person who has trouble with proprioception. Think about this person going about their entire day, every day, doing these same types of things with every activity. You can see how it could be so tiring and frustrating for them just to get through the day and to have some feelings of success in their daily lives as well. I really didn't even get into all of the ways proprioception could affect just the hammering activity. I didn't really talk about whether they were standing or sitting or bending down to reach the area where the nail was going to be. Were they going to be on a ladder? Was the ground stable or uneven? Was the surface horizontal or vertical, like hammering a nail onto the side of the house or on a workbench in the garage? All of these things are additional considerations with proprioception. They all have to do with how much force we have to use, not only to do the action of the hammer and nail, but maintain our body position for the activity to work. A person who has difficulty figuring out where they are in the world will likely have difficulty figuring out where their body is in relation to the surface they are hammering the nail into, and how much or little force they need to get each piece of the job done. Their brain and body signals to each other are jumbled in some way. Either the signals are taking a long time to get from one to the other, there's a delay in some way to getting the information necessary to make adjustments to be successful in getting the job done, or the signals that are being sent back and forth are just flat out incorrect. The person might have a difficult time determining how much force is enough and how much is too much because their brain signals can't tell either, and they often get it wrong. You might think, well, hammering a nail is an adult activity usually, and the adult can make themselves think harder and focus more and work through the proprioceptive issues by concentrating. But that's not how it works, and it's not a matter of concentration and focus. It's a matter of brain processing. Repetition could help with this to a certain degree with each specific activity, but that's not always the case. Remember the first example where you had your eyes closed while standing and trying to touch your nose with one finger? Well, picture standing in front of a wall with your eyes closed and trying to hammer the nail into the wall. How successful do you think you would be? Closing your eyes takes away that visual piece that helps you determine how far away you are from the wall and where the nail is exactly so you can hit it. For a person with proprioceptive issues, they are using their vision, and that is also helping them to a degree. But the other piece of it is that they have a difficult time within their body determining where they are in space. You might describe it as if their body is numb and they can't feel it. You know when your arm falls asleep, if you sleep on it wrong and you can't seem to make it move the way you want, and you can't even feel it, at least for a few or several seconds until it starts to wake back up. Well, this isn't exactly what's going on with proprioception, but it might help give you an idea of what it might feel like or seem like to kids and people who have issues with this sense. It can help them to use strategies like leaning against the wall or sitting in a chair with the back on it to help them figure out where their body is. These other objects in the environment, touching their body on the outside, gives them clues as to where they are. Otherwise, they might feel like they're floating in the middle of the room. Leaning or simply sitting in a chair still may not be enough pressure, though, to give their body the information they need. They might need extra force on their muscles and joints to actually feel it or have their brain realize they are feeling it. This is why we see kids who have difficulties with this sense bump into things a lot. They will run into walls or bump into the couch as they're walking by, and they often don't even seem to notice. Parents usually say they fall down a lot, but they never really seem to get hurt or cry. They're pretty tough and can handle a lot before they actually get hurt. While we don't want our kids to feel hurt or pain, it is an important thing to experience because it can be a huge safety issue if they can't feel these things. If they bump into things hard enough, they will hopefully eventually feel those things, and it will give their brain and body a sense of where they are at that moment and for a short period of time afterwards. These are kids that will also try to give their friend a high five, for example, but they hit their friend's hand so hard that it stings. Or on the opposite side, they don't hit hard at all and their hand is like a piece of spaghetti when they try to give their high five. It looks just like their hand is flopping around. These are extremes, of course, but you get the point that way. In either situation, their friend may think twice about giving them a high five anymore because of either getting hurt from it or it not working at all. The child with proprioceptive issues didn't do either of these actions on purpose. Their body just isn't able to regulate the correct amount of force needed to give the high five. This can really affect kids socially and emotionally because they want to have their friends like them and do things like this with them again because it's fun. They probably don't even know why their friend cried when they gave them a high five because they don't know that they hit their hand too hard. It most likely felt just right for the child with the sensory issues. The stinging feeling in their own hand let them know that they successfully gave their friend a high five, and that is a good feeling for them. Some other examples of things I often see kids do who have issues with proprioception, things like slamming doors too hard, bumping into people and objects, tripping and falling a lot, falling out of their chair. leaning their head on their hands on the table while sitting at their desk, breaking pencils or crayons a lot when they write or color, or the opposite, they write so lightly that you can't even see what they've written. They might have a death grip on the pencil or crayon, or again, the opposite, where they can't seem to keep a hold of it long enough to even draw a circle. They might purposefully crash land on the ground for fun, have difficulty with walking up or down stairs, trouble with falling asleep or staying asleep, general balance issues, and fine motor activity issues that involve especially two hands working together, like learning to tie their shoes, for example. An overriding theme for these kiddos is usually one or the other, too much force or not enough force, gripping things too tight or not gripping them tight enough. Sometimes it appears that their hand or grip strength is too weak, when in this situation, it is more likely that their brain is not communicating well enough to their hand and fingers to tell them how much force to use to keep holding the pencil. Something like drawing or coloring takes continual back and forth communication with your brain and body to maintain your grip on the object or pencil, let alone the communication about how much force is needed to make marks on the paper and how to keep your body sitting up in the chair without falling over, and all of these other things that go into the activity. When one signal gets mixed up or delayed, like the one that tells them to keep sitting upright in their chair, they might be getting the signals for how much force they need to hold the pencil, but they're falling over in their chair because that one is off. You can see how this could be so frustrating for kids because they are struggling so much to try and do all of this just to make it through one activity. Knowing they will have thousands of more activities to get through the rest of the day today and the next day, and you get the idea. We need to help these kids find ways to get through their day without feeling like they can't do anything right. The idea is to incorporate activities throughout their day that provide stimulation to their muscles, joints, and tendons. These are often thought of as deep pressure type activities and also heavy work activities. Some kids will like to wear tighter fitting clothing and maybe even like to wear a pressure vest or a weighted vest for part of their day. Some ideas for activities at home. Pushing and pulling activities are really good. Things like pushing a laundry basket full of clothes across the floor. You can put anything in the basket that gives it enough weight that is not too easy to push, but not too difficult either. They can do the opposite by pulling the basket across the room. You could tie a rope onto the basket and have them pull the rope to get it to move. These actions get them using their muscles and activate their joints to use tension to push and pull the objects. Jumping rope is another good activity, although this can be difficult for little kids. They can just jump on a mini trampoline or regular trampoline or jump over a pool noodle on the floor. You can put some painter's tape on the floor and have them jump over the lines of tape. They can also walk on their tiptoes on the lines for a more sustained type of deep pressure input through their feet. You can play catch using a heavier ball. They can catch and throw it, but also sitting on the floor and pushing it to roll it back and forth. Tossing heavy bean bags into containers. You can make your own using baggies with rice or dried beans in them. Just make sure they get sealed up well with heavy tape. Animal walking across the room, like bear crawling or crab walking, wheelbarrow walking, or log rolling across the floor. You can roll them up in a blanket on the floor like a burrito and unroll them to unwrap it. These are all just basic ideas for everyday type situations. There are millions of other ideas I haven't even mentioned and ways you can change these ideas to make them fit your child better. Get creative. Focus on activities that get them using their arms and legs, as well as activities that provide some squeezing or deep pressure on their entire body. Many kids will show you they have a preference for certain actions. For example, some kids love when you squeeze their feet. Some kids love wearing winter hats because those squeeze their head in a way that gives them some constant deep pressure. Whatever they tend to prefer, use that to help you think of new activities that will help them get those areas. For example, If they like when you squeeze their feet, they might like to get their feet down into a container of dried beans or other sensory boxes with other materials in them that can provide some deep pressure, and it's fun to play in them. If you check on my Instagram page, you will see a giant sensory play area that was filled with dried corn. I posted this fairly recently. It was so cool. It was probably about 3 feet deep, and the whole area was maybe 10 feet by 25 feet. If you have some windows that they can wash or a sliding glass door or something, the action of spraying the glass with the cleaner, which could just be a spray bottle with water if you want, depending on the age of your child, and wiping the glass on a vertical surface is good input for their arms. Of course, the point is not to actually get the windows cleaned, because I'm guessing they won't look better after your child wipes them. The point is to get them some proprioceptive input. Some ideas for teachers in their classroom with kids who need this proprioceptive input. You can have them push a heavy cart down the hall to run an errand for you. You can have them help rearrange the desks in the room if you have a special activity to do that day. You can have them unstack the chairs in the beginning of the day and push them across the floor to their desks, and also at the end of the day, putting them away the same way. Staple packets of paper for you or sharpen pencils using a manual pencil sharpener. They can do cutting activities, like maybe cutting out thicker pieces of paper for an activity that the class will be doing that day. If there is a chalkboard or a dry erase board in the room, they can wipe those down to erase them at different times of the day. You can offer them squeezy, squishy sensory toys for them to squeeze while sitting at their desk, especially when they're getting ready for some type of writing activity. You can have some beanbag type objects that are slightly heavy. They can use while sitting in their chair or at circle time for some additional deep pressure weight on their lap. Some activities all of the kids in the class could participate in. Simple things like jumping in place or jumping jacks, or things like chair push-ups or desk push-ups. Again, these activities are just the beginning of thinking about activities. There really isn't a wrong one. Some are more beneficial to these kiddos than others, but you don't always know which ones are until you start trying them. You will start to see which ones help the most by seeing how the kids respond afterwards. If they're able to do some of these fine motor activities in a more coordinated manner, or sometimes it's not even that, but you may see them fall down less or not walk into walls or things like that shortly after doing some of these deep pressure and heavy work activities. The effects are usually temporary and they last different lengths of time for each individual. This is why we recommend incorporating these types of activities throughout the whole day whenever possible. If you can make them part of the usual routine or schedule, that can make fitting them in a little easier for yourself. Try and think about your daily routine both at home and if you are a teacher at school with the kids. When you are going about your normal day, how can you add to or change an activity that is part of your routine already to make it more beneficial to the kids who need it? How can you make things work for them or give them some deep pressure in some way by adapting things to meet their needs? Even something as simple as giving them arm and leg squeezes before they sit in their chair for lunch at home. It doesn't have to be a whole production and long-lasting event each time you do activities with them. And at school, when it's time to go to the library, for example, maybe they could push the cart that has everyone's books on it when you walk down the hall together. Simple, basic things that can be incorporated naturally in your daily routine. I say this a lot, and not just about proprioceptive activities. This applies to all sensory activities. I'm going to end there for today. Please send me an email if you have any questions or if you have any requests for show topics. My email is allison@mymidwesttherapy.com. I will do my best to incorporate your thoughts and suggestions into my shows. Also, don't forget to check out the community resource directory page on my website at mymidwesttherapy.com and see what resources are there for you already. If you have a business and you want to get on and advertise, it's only $30 for a year. You could become a great resource for families and therapists out there who need you. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.